And I said to the folks in our U.S. West track, all the other guys, speaking of written books, you can just read their book. So come to my session where I haven't written this book. So I appreciate that you guys all came. Don't know a lot of you. I don't see a lot of familiar faces. My name is Brian Howard. I've been a part of Acts 29 since a long time ago, sometime around 2004. Joined Acts 29 when our church was 2 years old and about 500 people. I pastored in the Los Angeles area for most of the last 25 years. So I'm from Southern California. Right now I live in Orange County, South Orange County, and was an executive pastor for 10 years. Planted a church that was an 829 church and pastored that church for almost 10 years. Then I spent 3 years in Louisville, Kentucky, co-founded Sojourn Network, if you know that network, and launched that, got that off the ground. In fact, I just preached there last Sunday and had the opportunity to go back and speak at Sojourn Network last week. And for the last 3 years or so, I'm back in Orange County. And what I do now, I'm a part of a local church in Orange County, in Acts 29 Church. And what I also do is I coach a lot of pastors and leaders. So at any given time, I have 24 pastors that I coach, and then I usually do a coaching cohort every year. So some of you have gone through that, and I see a few guys out there that have. I also lead Acts 29 U.S. West, and so we have 12 states and about 100 churches in Acts 29. In terms of my background in speaking to this topic, I'm going to talk to you about how to get people connected to your church. I've carved out a bit of a niche in the last 10 or 12 years. In terms of the Reformed theological world, with helping us think practically. And so, you know, a lot of us are really good at the preach piece and the care piece, but we're not so effective at the lead piece. And so when you go into the more pragmatic church world, you find that a lot of those guys are really good at the lead piece and maybe not as effective at the preach and care piece. So I'm already assuming that your theology is solid and that you can preach because you're at an Acts 29 event and that you've read Richard Baxter, and so you're deeply shepherding people, and now you're trying to figure out how to get people to stay in your church, all right, because that's something that most of us want. Now, recently I was coaching a pastor who asked me if I thought that it was good that he had 50% of his members connected to community in his church. And I remember saying, I guess it really all depends on what you believe about community. And then I went on to tell him, I think 50% isn't a very good number, if I'm just being honest, because what I believe about community, if I look at the New Testament, really the whole of the Old Testament and the New Testament, what I see is that authentic biblical community as the commitment and experience of every follower of Jesus Christ. So if you believe that, if you say, I believe that authentic biblical community should be the commitment and experience of every follower of Jesus Christ, and then we as church leaders say, I guess it's okay if 50% of our people are plugged into community, I would say that's probably not very good. I don't think that you're going to be able to use the excuse that you were a nurse or a firefighter and so you didn't have time for community because you worked a strange work schedule, and so you just ignored the dozens of New Testament admonitions toward one anothering because of your work schedule. So where does this commitment to community come from? Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you some really practical steps, but first I just want to take 5 minutes and just lay a basic theological foundation, things that I know that you probably already believe, but I don't want to take this for granted necessarily even at an Acts 29 conference. So where does this commitment to community and connectedness come from? Well, it starts all the way back in the fact that God eternally pre-existed in community. We all believe that, right? God is a God of community. And then we see just all the way back in the first three chapters of Genesis that God created us for community. You all believe that. You probably preached that. God created us to experience community and to live in community as He does. And then we see when we get to the New Testament that Jesus lived in and prayed for community. That's pretty clear. You look at Jesus' pattern. He lived in and prayed for community. In fact, Jesus invited 12 men to share with Him an intense 3-year communal journey. That's what He did. He lived with these men. He ate with these men. He shared everything with these men. Jeff Vanderstelt would have been proud of Him for doing that so well. He'd existed for all time in the community of the Trinity. And then when He became incarnate, he followed this same pattern of intense community with the few. We see also, as Steve Timmis and Tim Chester have done good work on this, that we're saved into a community. So God eternally preexisted in community. God created us for community. Jesus lived in and prayed for community. And then we're saved into community. I mean, Timus wrote a whole book on this ultimately, didn't he? Ephesians 2:19, so then you're no longer strangers and aliens, but your fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God. So to be a Christian is to be a part of a spiritual community. All right, so far you all agree with me, right? Nod your head if you agree. You just had lunch. So Christianity is best lived out in community. So rather than white-knuckling this community thing, people have to believe that Christianity is best lived out in community. So Christianity is not simply attending a church service. And so as church leaders, we have to regularly ask our people questions like this. So I'm just going to read you a few questions for you to think about. Who are you daily living life with? Who in your life truly knows your struggles? Who are you encouraging continuously? Who are you regularly praying with? Who's praying for you? Who are you partnering with to reach unbelievers that you know? Who can correct you? Who are you investing in? With whom do you meet with to discuss what God is teaching you? Who would be by your hospital bed to pray for you and to encourage you besides the pastor? All right, who's not going to allow you to walk away from your marriage or from the faith? Perhaps you've done this. We had a man that tried to leave his wife a few years ago in our church, and we fought with him until he finally gave up. We showed up at his work. We had elders go to his house over and over and over again. He asked us to stop him from doing this, so we stopped him. And eventually he went back and their marriage was restored. You might say that's mafia eldership, and it kind of was, right? So are you faithfully participating in the life of a local church? Who would you meet with if your marriage was in trouble besides the professional? Who have you counseled with the Word of God recently? All 14 of these questions come out of direct commands in the New Testament. You understand that? Every Christian should be working toward having answers to every one of these questions. Okay, so we all agree, in fact, if you agree in a second, say we agree. We all agree that Sunday morning church attendance is not what the New Testament is calling us to. Agree? All right, good. All right, so, but we often struggle to get people connected beyond Sundays. Now, I pastored full-time for 22 years. Preached through most of the New Testament, church planning. I was an executive pastor for many years at a large church. And about 2.5 years ago, I started to go visit churches. And I started to preach in different churches. And I was walking up with my teenage kids and with my two little ones, walking up to churches and experiencing what it's like to visit your churches. And realizing, wow, I'm not even spiritually vulnerable right now. If I was spiritually vulnerable and I had conjured up the will to show up at a church service today, this was a really rough experience and I don't think I can come back next week. That's what I experienced over and over and over again. So what I want to talk to you about is, and what I'm going to do just practically speaking, is building on this theological foundation that I assume that you already agree to. I want to give you just a few reasons why people aren't connecting to your church, and then I'm going to teach you some things that you can do to change this, all right? There are two primary reasons that churches struggle to get people connected, all right? Here's the first. The first reason is that you've made connecting too confusing. Now, you might feel like this doesn't apply to you, but I can tell you, I mean, I don't want to exaggerate it, but I probably visited 30 or 40 churches in the last 3 years. And I would say it's maybe two or three of those churches out of 30 or 40 that I didn't feel confused as to where to start. So navigating the church bulletin or the program or whatever hipster little flyer you have with print that guys like me can't read because I'm too old, so I'm like putting my glasses on, I constantly wonder, where do I start? Where do I start? Am I supposed to start with this program or this program or this program? Do I start with the men's retreat or the women's retreat or the marriage retreat or one of the other 20 things that's being advertised? And so in so many churches, the reason people aren't connecting to your church is because you've made connecting too confusing. Where do I start? Now, you might feel like people want options. You might feel like that's the case. But instead, what most people will do is they'll say, I don't know where to start, so I'm not really going to start anywhere. I guess I won't start anywhere if there's not a clear starting place. The lack of a clear first step undermines this whole newcomer assimilation process, all right? The second reason people don't connect to your church oftentimes is because you've made connecting too big of a commitment. Now, I'm going to step on some of your toes here because it may be that half of you do what I'm about to say that you shouldn't do, okay? Does connecting beyond Sundays in your church mean joining a small group or a missional community? Go ahead and nod your head if that's you, and then I won't pick on you, okay? So for a lot of people, connecting means I come here and then I join a small group or a missional community. You know what that means? That means that I have to go to somebody's home that I don't know and sit in a circle with a group of strangers, some sort of strange circle, where I'm going to have to share my deepest, darkest sin and confess what I've done in the past week. And that's how so many people take that. So even mature Christians are so often uncomfortable with this step. So what happens when a person comes to your church is you say, "Welcome, we're so glad that you're here. Now we're going to sit you in a circle in a small group full of people and put you back through the seventh grade again." This uncomfortable environment where most people are unwilling to do that. So they often won't, and you'll end up with a lot of unconnected people at a weekly Sunday morning event. So you might say, what works to get people connected beyond Sundays then? Okay, so if people don't connect because connecting is too confusing, and if people don't connect because connecting is too high of a commitment, then what I want to teach you is I want to teach you a system here that I ran for 10 years and I've coached, I don't know, maybe hundreds of guys through this. I know there are at least 40 or 50 churches, and I've coached the pastors through this kind of a process that are using this today. All right. I recently taught something similar to this at Exponential, and I brought up one of the guys that I coach, Josh Reich, who's the Arizona leader for Acts 29. And Josh has been running this now for a couple years, and we ran probably 2,000 people through this process in a seven-year period of time. So what it'll allow you to do is to move from being an event-driven ministry and move into getting people connected. Now, before I go into this, I want to say a couple things that aren't in my notes. First of all, I would argue, if I were on your church team and you said, "Brian, how many people should we have connected beyond our Sunday morning gathering?" I'd be fighting toward 90%. Like that's what I would be fighting toward. Now, you might say, "You don't understand, we're in a college town, you know, people come and go. All of us are in college towns, we're in Acts 29. Okay, so most of us planted churches with college students, most of us have military, or we live in Colorado, or we have transitional areas, and so we all think that that's particular just to us, and what I found is that most of us have those sorts of issues. So what I would say is, no, we want to be fighting toward 90%, 95% of people in community. That's what we want to be fighting toward. Now, you might say, "We've got people here that are brand new, that are visitors." That's good, but don't ever settle at saying, you know, we've got 50% of our Sunday morning attenders or 50% of our members in community. I would say, if you really believe this stuff that I just unpacked, in terms of I could preach four sermons on this, God is a God of community. God created us for community. Jesus lived in and prayed for community. We're saved into community. The whole of the New Testament pattern teaches us that we need to live in community. Set that number really high, lead pastor or small groups pastor. All right, the second thing I want to say is, before I even get to my notes here, is I want to say this. And this is going to sound very Andy Stanley-esque when I say this, okay? And I think maybe that's good, okay? So that first 10 or 15 minutes that happens at your church service, even if you're intensely reformed, and you just feel like we're so Calvinistic that we don't care if people like us or not, that first 10 or 15 minutes is so critical in whether a person ever connects to your church. And I've heard people say it's not necessarily even the sermon. It's the 10 minutes before the sermon and the 10 minutes after the sermon. And so often I visit young Acts 29 churches or churches in our general sort of theological or missional strain, and I walk up, and I'm the guy you want in your church because I'm 45 and married and can afford to write a check, right? So there's some stability. You're like, we need people like that, not just people who are 23 and make $8 an hour. We also need, it'd be great to have some stable people in our church who have jobs and tithe, okay? So, but when I walk up in that first 10 minutes and I see seven hipsters huddled around a coffee pot and I can't figure out how to break in, and I have four people, including two gangly teenagers with me, that already feel horrible that we're visiting a new church, and I have two kids that are going to go to your children's ministry and don't care if you use John Piper's curriculum or not. They only care if it's safe, clean, and fun. That's all anybody cares about with children's ministry. We know you care about John Piper, but they care about, parents care about safe and clean, and kids care about fun. And if it's not those three things, nobody's ever coming back to go through your three-year Desiring God children's ministry curriculum, because it's dirty, not fun, and people are getting kidnapped, right? So it doesn't matter how theologically accurate it is. So those first 10 minutes, you know, I worked in Andy Stanley's world for 4 years. So I coached all of their church planters for 4 years. And I learned a lot because I didn't come from that world. He hired me from this world to coach in his world. And they have a position on their team called Service Programming Director. If you're familiar with that world, that person's whole job is to make sure that everything runs smoothly on Sunday morning. That's that person's whole job. So I would just say pay attention to the 10 minutes before the sermon and the 10 minutes after the sermon. What does a person experience when they walk up? What happens when two people who are thinking about getting divorced show up and they go, let's go to church. Let's visit a church and let's see if we can put this back together. How are you going to greet them? What's going to happen? What are they going to do with their kids? Well, like all of that stuff you have to consider. And then what happens immediately after those 10 minutes? So again, assuming that you've thought of that, now, once you've thought of that, you have a great like 10, 15 minutes before. If I show up, it's a warm environment where I'm not terrified. And you have a great 10 minutes experience after. How do you get people connected? Will you go give me a water, Ben, please? Oh, there's one next to me. Good. All right. Number one, here we go. Have one very simple step for newcomers. Have one simple first step for newcomers. No matter how much I teach this, people push back on it and want to have seven things that you can do in the bulletin. Come to the men's retreat, come to the women's retreat. But here's what I want to encourage you to do. And not only did I do this for 9 years, and you might say, your story's old, the last time you were in this was 6 years ago. No, we started to implement this at Sojourn, and then I've been teaching it to churches ever since. Not only did I do it, but I've seen it. I've never seen this fail. I've never seen this break down. Take away the myriad of options and the heavy-duty commitments. Take away the first step is to join a missional community. We know you believe in missional communities. We know you believe in community, but what is an unbelieving husband and wife or an unbelieving single person who comes to a church who's just going in America, and I know most of you live here, right? In America, that's still the first step, is to show up to a church service on Sunday morning for most people. So what is that person, like how can you get that person involved at the next step? The first step should be simple and happen monthly. Now, I didn't create this, but I was an executive pastor at a large church in Huntington Beach, California, and I planted out of that church. And so I learned this in this church, and the guy there learned it from somebody else. And for 9 years, I ran a thing every month, once a month on Sunday evening called Pastor's Coffee. Now, there's people all over the country running Pastor's Coffees now because I've taught a lot of them to do this, and people call it different things sometimes. But what it was and what it is it's an hour and a half long event where a person can come, meet the pastors, hear about the distinctives of the church, and ask questions. Very simple. One, you take away all of the options, and you have one very simple first-time event. All right? Easy, clear, and effective. Now, for 9 years, every single Sunday morning, from the beginning, I got up and I said, are you new here? If you're new here, we do something just for you. It's every month. It's on Sunday night. It's called Pastor's Coffee. Here's what we're going to do at that event. For 9 years, I said that every Sunday morning. And I don't want to exaggerate this again, but just about every person who ever stepped through the foot of our doors more than two or three times came to that. Because it was so clear, I don't have to wonder where I start. I start with one simple first-time event. And then let me give you some suggestions for how to make this work. Push everyone through your first-step event. So everybody goes through this. Communicate your first step event every single week. So this is another thing that people make the mistake of is they don't emphasize it every single week because you get tired of announcing it. So you might feel like it's like a broken record. But every single week, both written and verbal, it should be communicated. Are you new here? Here's our first step event. Now, I'm assuming, again, our goal is a person visits our local church, and what we want to do is we want to retain them so we can plug them into community, see them grow, and be discipled, and be a vibrant, active part of our church. So communicate this every single week. Schedule your First Step event monthly, rain or shine. This is another thing that people make the mistake of, is they do a newcomers class after Sunday morning, or they do a Connect class, or they do something like that, but they don't do it with regularity, all right, with consistency. So another thing is schedule this every single month, rain or shine. And what I've learned is that when a person visits your church worship gathering, when a person visits your worship gathering, they might come 6, 8, 10, 12 times before you'll ever... Now, if you're 60 people, then you know everybody who's there. Like somebody comes and you swoop on them and beg them to stay and ask them what job they have and hope that they're successful. But as your church grows a little bit larger, a person can come and they'll be there 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 times. And before they'll ever come to this, you might find that a person's here for 3 or 4 months before they come to this. But they'll know that every single month, the information is there. If I want to connect to this local church, you're being friendly on Sundays, your worship gathering's good, you're all that sort of stuff, and a person can clearly know. I don't have to wonder when it is or what I do, all right? I'm going to give you a couple of other tips that people that you might want to push back on or ask questions about this, but I wouldn't do this in your church worship space. And I wouldn't do this like, hey, welcome the 8 of you, and you're sitting in an auditorium that seats 300 people, and welcome to the front row. Like, I would encourage you to do this in a home-like setting. Now, you might say, wait a second, didn't you say people are afraid to come to homes? Yeah, but you're not going to ask them to confess their sin. You've already communicated what this event's going to be. So, and then record everyone who comes to your First Step event so that you can follow up on everybody who shows up. So picture this now. From day one, some of you, maybe you're just starting a church plant. From day one, you say every single week, are you new here? Welcome. We're thankful that you're here. We'd love to tell you more about what it looks like to get connected to this church. We have something for you every single month. Here's the next 6 dates that it's offered. You can plan on it. Here's what we're going to do. We're not going to ask you for anything. We're just going to give you some information about what it looks like to connect to this church. Now, if you say that once, nobody will come. But if you say it every single week and it's written and you say that over and over and over again, what I found is that everybody will come, because eventually they'll feel like I'm missing something if I don't go to this. All right, now, once a person has taken the first step in getting connected to your church, they've gone to Pastor's Coffee. Okay, now let me just address when is the best time to do this. For years, I've been telling people not to do this after church services on Sunday morning. And a lot of the guys that I know and respect push back and still do that. I'm still somewhat convinced that that's not the best time to do this, but you might be convinced otherwise. So I do have people that implement this, that do this after their worship gathering on Sunday morning. I just want to say to you, is that about your convenience or about the convenience of the person? Okay, so what I found is that Sunday evening was the ideal time to do this. And I was in the suburbs of Los Angeles and then ran this in Louisville as well. So what I found is that was the best time to do this, was on a Sunday evening. All right, so you might say, will Sundays work for me, Sundays after church? I just think you have to ask, will people stick around? And if you have 2 services, which a lot of you do, will people stick around past the second service? All right, let me go on. Now, once a person has taken the first step, so have one simple first step for newcomers. Do away with all the options. Now, can you still advertise men's retreats and groups and all that sort of stuff? Sure, but just make sure you have one simple first step that you push everybody through. Next, make sure that it's crystal clear what the person is to do next. All right, so make sure that you're I don't love the word assimilation, but your connect strategy is crystal clear. All right, assimilation sounds a little Nazi Germany to me. And so let's say your connect strategy, okay? So make sure that your connect strategy is crystal clear. Now, here's what you have to ask here. What does a fully integrated member of this local church look like? What does that look like? For example, has been to Pastor's Coffee. I'm sounding really Rick Warren here, first base, second base, third base, but that's not what I mean to do. All right. has come to Pastor's Coffee, is connected to community, is committed to membership, and is committed to serve. So you as an elder team or you as a leadership team, ask yourself, what do you think the New Testament is calling a fully integrated? These are my ideas here. These are suggestions of what you might implement. So what would you say a fully integrated member of your church looks like? How do you know when a person is fully connected? So I would say in my world, this is what it looks like. And in our church, this is what it looks like. That person has come to our first step event. Now, what if a person starts all the way down here? I still want them to come to the first time event because we're going to do things in that event that we aren't going to do anywhere else. So that person has come to our first step event. They've come to Pastor's Coffee. Two, they're connected to community. Three, they're committed to partnership or membership. And four, they're committed to serve. Now, you might add to that, they're committed to give. Honestly, in my mind, you could just go with number one and number three, because if all of these other things are embodied in your membership process, you just need to be able to define that. What does a fully integrated member of your local church look like? So then in your first step event, you need to make that crystal clear. Because remember, in the beginning, all you're trying to do is get a person to that first step event. Come to Pastor's Coffee. It's as simple as that. Come to Pastor's Coffee. We'll tell you everything you want to know about this church. Now, regardless of what your process looks like, make sure that it's clear and simple as to what the next step is. Now, this is really simple in the pragmatic world. You know, I live fairly close to Saddleback Church. I've probably been there maybe 20 times in my life, just visiting on some Saturday night or something like that. It's pretty clear in that sort of pragmatic world what it looks like to become integrated. So often in our churches, it's not clear. Well, our theology doesn't mean that we can't make it clear to a person as to how you're connected and fully integrated into the life of the church. So make sure that you've clearly identified the process. So if your second step is community, all right, our first step is Pastor's Coffee, our second step is community, then consider these kinds of things, all right? So communicate at your first step event exactly how and where a person plugs into community. So you put something in between the Sunday morning worship gathering and your missional community structure or your small group structure. So communicate that at Pastor's Coffee exactly how and where a person plugs in. Consider starting a brand new group for those who go through your Pastor's Coffee event. So lots of churches do this. They join people together that come in together. Consider starting have a couple of group leaders present at your first step event who are ready to plug people into community. Make sure that each person who attends your first step event is invited into community within the next couple of weeks. So what you've done is you've taken those 200 people that are there on Sunday morning, and you've shrunk that down to a living room of a dozen people that you can now clearly follow up on. All right. If your second step is membership, if for you it's like first step is Pastor's Coffee, second step is membership, then consider these kinds of things. Clearly communicate at your first step event the date of your next membership class. Do you have the next? In fact, I would always communicate more than one date. If you have one date on the calendar, there will be a third of your people that are like, we have a birthday party on that night. There's a school event on that night. If you want to bring people into membership, communicate the next three membership classes. Follow up on each person who came to Pastor's Coffee, inviting them into the commitment process. All right, the key here is to make sure that any new person who wants to connect to your church knows exactly how to do it. Now, I'm gonna complicate this just a little bit. I think it is fair. Okay, now what's non-negotiable is you've got to have one, and if you hired me as your Connect director or as your small groups pastor or something, I would say to you, lead pastor, we're going to have one simple event. We've got to have one simple first step event. Now, what I think you can do, and you might think I'm shooting myself in the foot here, I do think you can have options for step two, but only two options. Now, I used to, and for the first 5 years that I ran this, it was Pastor's Coffee, membership, community, and service. All right. But what I realized years ago, I was in New York City and I was meeting with the apostles guys back when J.R. Vassar was still pastoring there. And we were sitting at a table discussing this, and we were using a similar system. I remember them saying to me, and I think Driscoll wrote this in one of his books back in the day, a lot of people are not going to commit to membership until they've committed to community, until they've experienced community first. But there are other people that are willing to commit to membership right away. So I do think you can, in your first step event, say to people, hey, the next step for you is one of two things. If you feel like you're ready to dive in and join and become a partner here or a member here, here are the next three classes. That's the next step for you. Or if you feel like I'm not quite ready to do that yet, I want to connect to some people here, we're ready. We've got this starting here. We've got this starting. We're ready to connect you into community. So I think you can have two sort of roads here, because in my third step, they're going to circle back around again, all right? And so step three is rigorously work toward a fully assimilated membership. Make the path out of your first step crystal clear, and then step three, wait for it, is rigorously, is that in the notes, Ben, or not?
Yep.
Is it? There it is. Rigorously work towards a fully assimilated membership. I've changed, and I don't like the word assimilation anymore, I told you, but you can change that word if it offends your sensibilities. A holistic membership, maybe. So this is where you have defined as an elder team or a church leadership team, and it's on paper. Now, I see my friend Paul from Huntsville, Alabama, out there, and he pastors a large church. Whenever I work with a large church leader, which is quite a bit, they think that all of this is clear because it's clear in their head. But it's not written down on paper. Now, it's clear with Paul on paper probably also, but I don't mean that it's in your head, but I mean you have agreed as an elder team, this is what a fully integrated member of our church looks like. They've attended our first step event. They're involved in community, in a community group or a gospel community or a missional community. They formally committed to membership or partnership, and they're involved in serving. Now, if this is the case, if you're measuring these four environments, then the numbers in each of these environments, then you've got to begin to ask questions about these. So how effective are you at moving people into your first step event? How effective are you at that? So are you getting people into your first step event? And then how effective are you at moving people beyond your first step event? Let me stop here and say, when people come to your first, I'm just going to call it Pastor's Coffee. When people come to Pastor's Coffee, how effective are you at capturing their information, following up on them, and moving them beyond that? How effective are you at that? That's important. You don't have to deal with the crowd anymore. You have a small group of people. You should have everybody's name and email address coming out of that and follow up on everybody so that everybody gets what they need. What I find is that so often people don't plug in because they just can't figure out how to. And the last thing you want a person to say is, we spent 6 months trying to plug into the church and we just could never figure out how to do it. And that seems to be really common to me. What percentage, here's the kinds of things you're going to measure. What percentage of our attenders are members? It's another thing. What percentage of our attenders are committed to community? It's another, if you're going to circle back through these environments, what percentage of our members are committed to community? And then have those involved in community gone through our membership partnership process? Let me see if I can use this whiteboard. So if you've got your first step event here, and then you have community and membership. I'm assuming you're not Calvary Chapel, so you believe in membership. So you've got community and membership. So in terms of getting people connected to your church, remember I told you there's two reasons that people don't. It's because it's too confusing and it's too big of a commitment. What you can do instead is have one very simple process, and then make sure that in this one very simple first step, make sure that your first step event, you capture everybody who comes through it. It's clear where you go next. And even if you have two roads here where people go next, then you circle back through these environments regularly and say, is everybody who's a member involved in community, and is everybody who's involved in community committed to membership? Does that make sense? So all that to say, when I say commit to rigorously work toward a fully assimilated membership, I'm assuming that you've not only defined what that looks like, but that you're measuring those various environments. All right? Makes sense. All right. Got a lot more I can say, but let me stop and take questions, and then I'll give you a little bit more on this. Questions on any of this? First step event, how any of this works together. Okay, he asked, he said, we're in a multi-ethnic congregation. Does the pastor with the coffee translate well? To be honest with you, I don't know. I don't think it's important what you call it or necessarily when you do it. I think it's important that it be clear, that it be contextualized. I'm not trying to go with C's, but that it be consistent. All right? So I mean, that's what's important. So I know of three or four churches in Hawaii that use this process, and I don't know if there's any Hawaiians in the room, but they call it like poo-poos with the pastors or something like that. Apparently there's some Hawaiian dessert that's called poo-poos. So they do it, and they've been running it for like 7 years now. So the idea is, and the idea that I've built this on is, at least in the context that I'm familiar with in the Western United States, and then I've worked in the Midwest for a few years, in those contexts, most people are coming, in the States anyways, visiting a church going, I wonder who the person is who's preaching. I wonder who the leaders are. I wonder what this church is about. And I wonder if I wanted to get more information, how I would get involved. So the context of how you phrase that or how you do that contextually in an inner city or an urban context or a suburban context, you'll have to figure out what people will come to and what they won't. Far in the back. He asked, does it need to be the lead pastor that does this or any pastor? My leaning would be that it needs to be a lead pastor. Now, does it need to be a lead pastor in a church of 8,000 people? No, but I'm not really teaching this to churches of 8,000 people primarily. I assume that they probably figured that out if they have that many people there. So I'm assuming that if you're in a church of somewhere from 10 people to 1,000 people, what I would assume is that people visiting your church worship gathering are going to want to know who that person is who's up front. And so I would suggest that you're wise to, as a lead pastor, to lead that. So, back in the back. I do. I think that that's a, you know, believe it or not, it's not that awkward when you have one or two show up. I've had that happen probably 7 or 8 times. I've had it. It's worse when there's 45 people in the room, because then you have like 8 people that dominate the conversation with discussions about sign gifts, you know, which, by the way, remind me to come back to how you communicate in this with believers and unbelievers. I spent 5 years doing this the wrong way. In the backyard of the Master's Seminary in Los Angeles, arguing with seminary students. You know, and I went to Talbot, so I'm good at arguing with Master's Seminary students. So, but I would say that consistency is critical. And I don't think it's that big of a deal to just have 2 people there. What you don't want is you don't want 12 church leaders there and 2 people. You know, you want to look at it a little bit more like a round table dessert, like come over, like, you would look at it more almost like a lead pastor connecting with everybody who's new. I think that consistency is really important, though. And I realize you might feel, and we had one night in 9 years when nobody showed up, which was kind of awesome because we all went out for dessert and coffee that night, you know, the people that were there. But I think consistency is more important than the awkwardness of 1 or 2 people. I think what you would need to do instead is you would need to make sure that you'd contextualize it to the way where you weren't in a room this size, where you were doing it in a living room, and even, I mean, one night we had our 5 elders there, and we had one college girl, and 5 elders, and 2 of our elders were over 60, you know, so, and we made that girl feel so special. We're like, hey, this is your own pastor's coffee. It's just the 5 elders and you. Tell us your story. Tell us how we can pray for you. She had 5 elders praying for her for the next 5 years. I mean, I still vividly remember her name and her face, and so we turned that into a really special occasion for her. And so I would say consistency is more important. Before I take another question, let me talk about believers versus unbelievers, because I forgot about this and it wasn't in my notes. One of the big mistakes that you can make when you do some sort of newcomers event is talking primarily to Christians. Because I realized, now for we saw, you know, and I'm using an old story here, but we saw several hundred conversions over a 10-year period of time. And so it was pretty, like, I would say our average crowd size at a pastor's coffee was 15 people or 17 people, something like that. And initially what would happen is that the five people in the room that were hurt by their previous church would want to ask all kinds of questions. And here I am just trying to, like, I always give too much information rather than not enough information. So here I am trying to answer every question, realizing the reason they're asking me a question about accountability is not because they want to know how we do QuickBooks, but because their last pastor ran off with his wife. And so after a while, I learned, okay, there are people coming in here who are hurt every time. And they're going to ask those questions based on the fact that they've come out of some hyper-Pentecostal background, so they're terrified about Pentecostalism, and so they're going to ask me 12 different questions about the nuances of the sign gifts positions. Or somebody's coming out of a situation where they were abused by a pastor, so they want to ask all about pastoral accountability. What I realized is that the four or five unbelievers, that's who we really want to come, the four or five unbelievers are sitting there completely confused when I drop Wayne Grudem's name and John Piper's name and I talk about Fee's position on the sign gifts and did you read Jack Deere, what he says, and then all these people are completely confused. So one of the things you have to wrestle with newcomers sorts of events, is even if you have nine Christians there and one non-Christian, that non-Christian, it was a big step for that person to come. And they just heard your theological dialogue with three seminary students for an hour and a half. I just refused to do that after about 5 years. So what I would do is I would say, hey, here's for those of you that don't understand all this theological stuff, don't worry, you know, hang around here. For those of you who do, let me give you a few things. Here's where we are as a church. You know, we're Reformed, we're missional, we're complementarian. Nobody knows what complementarian means except us. And so I would usually have to explain that briefly, you know, or sometimes I wouldn't bring it up unless a person asked. And I would make sure that I didn't devote all of my time dealing with theological questions. So I'm just telling you, I could save you 4 years of unbelievers leaving confused about your terminology by you being more aware of that. All right? Other questions? Right there. Yeah, so I'm always asked this. In fact, the last time I taught this at Exponential, I did it with Josh Reich. And Josh Reich, who's in Tucson, is a skilled leader. Josh uses connection cards. And I grew up in Tucson, so I know that culture pretty well. It's like a suburb of California where I live now. I've never been a fan of communication cards or connection cards, although there's probably somebody else in this room that just feels like they're amazing. So for me, I've just never felt like they were super effective. And we used them for 10 years. For 10 years, we used them, and routinely, we got like my kids and six other teenagers filling out fake names with fake prayer requests on them and stuff like that. And then we promised to people that we would pray, and the whole thing was a big joke about somebody's gout that he never had anyways. Or whatever. So I just always felt like the communication card thing didn't work for a while. Now, Josh Reich in Tucson, who's very skilled at integrating people in, his entire church fills out a communication card every Sunday. So, because I'm teaching and Josh isn't in this, what I would say to you is, I'm never going to fill out a communication card at your church. I just am not. Never. I've never filled out a communication card a single time. For me, that's just like, I don't write. When's the last time I wrote anything? I don't carry a moleskin. I have an iPad and I don't... So you want me to write my name, and are you going to spam me with stuff? So I want you to give me information on my terms. Now, you don't have to agree with me, and if you don't, keep using communication cards. I just don't see it being extremely effective. If you do, then keep doing it, because some guys do. Yes. Okay, so she's asking, do you have a creative alternative to that? Are you, I have to repeat this for the tape, are you concerned about the body welcoming people or, you know, here's the thing is that I don't see the Sunday morning worship gathering, the primary purpose of that as community per se. Now, I realize that community is happening there and community is being built there, but my primary concern in the worship gathering is for us to corporately and collectively worship God together and then to push people out into smaller communities to be involved in the one anothering. So I do think, now you might say, wait, but you talked about the importance of being warm in that sun, but I don't think that has anything to do with communication cards. I think that has to do with training people well, with teaching people, look for, like you should be teaching your leaders, your children's workers, your elders. You should, as elders, especially if you're a larger church, your elders do not need to be hanging out with each other on Sundays. Like you need to be looking for people that look awkward. You know, that are the person that's in the corner that doesn't, you ought to be going to all those people. So, but I don't think the communication card solves it. By the way, you might say, well, what about like communication cards for prayer requests? Great. I think you could still use it for that. I just don't think it's the best tool for actually getting a person beyond the Sunday morning gathering and connected. I don't think it's the best tool for that. It's perfectly fine for you to still have communication cards. Hey, if you want us to pray for you, please let us know. We've got a card right here. We pray every Tuesday as a team for everything that's turned in. If you want information on some of these things, I think it's perfectly fine for you to have communication cards. I just wouldn't stop there and think that everybody will fill those out. So, yes.
Could you walk through what that monthly gathering looks like with newcomers, the 60 to 90 minute slot? I mean, how do you structure that? Maybe you give an example of like 5 people show up and you give an example of 20 people show up.
Yeah, so he wants to know, could you walk through what that 60 to 90 minute time would look like? And I think it's pretty contextual, okay? But I'll tell you some key elements that I think that I would suggest that you include in this. First of all, if you are the lead pastor, church planter, or preaching pastor, you might feel like people don't want to hear you talk about yourself, but they probably do. And so I would spend 10 or 15 minutes and tell them who you are. I'd tell them who you are, and I would get personal. I would say, here's who I am. Here's where I came from. This is where I grew up. This is where I went to college. You know, I married my high school sweetheart, if you did. You know, for me, I have 4 kids. My oldest son's here. He's 16. You know, so I want you to know who I am, especially in the era of no denominational names. People don't know who you are. It used to be that I could know who you were by looking up your denomination. Now I have no idea because it's like, where's Waldo in terms of what denomination you are? And so I'm trying to figure out where you went to seminary and that sort of stuff to try to, you know, so that sort of stuff. So I would say one is tell them who you are as a lead pastor. All right. 2, give them a brief history of your church. That's interesting to people. Hey, we've been around for 5 years. We planted this church, and here's why. This is, you know, we moved to the city to do this and this and this. So give them a brief history of your church. All right, 3, I'd give them a brief sort of philosophical explanation of here's who we are and what we're doing. This is what we're about. Now, if you've read what I've written, I've done a lot of writing on vision planning and strategic planning. This is a good place for you to say, this is what we value as a church. Okay, so these are the 3 or 4 things we value. Let's look at like Soma Communities in Tacoma or Sojourn in Louisville. Like Sojourn has 5 identities, worshipers, servants, missionaries, learners, and worshipers, servants, missionaries, learners, and family. So it's great for you to say, these are the 5 things we're about. You guys need to know this. So that would be the 3rd thing is some sort of some philosophical, like here's who we are as a church. Now, you don't want to talk for an hour and a half. And if you have 90 minutes, I might talk for 30 minutes and have 30 minutes of dialogue and have 30 minutes of hangout time, serve dessert or coffee or whatever. The 4th thing that I would do is I would introduce them to any key people that they need to know. Hey, so we have a children's director. She will help your kids get plugged in. Maybe you found that hard. We've got this person. This person is here to help you get connected to community and to answer your questions or whatever. If there's any key people, or you might have a couple key staff people. Oftentimes people want to know who the worship leader is. And so you might have your worship leader there and that person could introduce himself, or you might have 2 or 3 staff people there. You could introduce those people. 5 is I would tell them what to do next. Here's what to do next. This is your next step. And it's got to be like dates on the calendar, and do not let 12 people come to your event and leave without you collecting their names and email addresses. Okay, so because I've got four kids, 10, 12, 14, and 16, they're spread across a range of schools, elementary, middle school, and high school. So we're at schools a lot, and school events, and basketball, and marching band, and school plays, and all that sort of stuff. So there's a school carnival at our elementary school every year, and you can go over, and there's a bunch of dudes out there with karate gis on, right, with like martial arts guys, and you can go over and you can break a board. But guess what you have to give them before you break the board? Your email address. What does everybody ask you every time you're at the store at Macy's or somewhere trying to buy something? They say, do you have an email address? You think they're being nice? No, they're trying to get you on their list. That's what everybody's trying to do. So I would say for you as a church, am I saying market to everybody? I'm saying no. Don't let 12 people come to your First Step event and not know who they are. Those people might have come out of a miserable, vulnerable, spiritually broken state and might not come back again. And you might need to follow up on them. So make sure that you catch that information as well. So I would spend 30, 35 minutes, 40 minutes unpacking those things, being careful to not get in all kinds of theological arguments, and then say, what kinds of questions do you guys have for me now? All right, and then as people start to ask questions and they say things, so what do you guys do for men's ministry? You can say, we do a couple things. You know, we do it. We primarily focus on our, you know, we're a little more simple. We primarily try to get people in missional communities, but then we do a men's event every year. Now, just be aware that there's a couple of seminary, and I went to seminary, okay, so I can throw myself under the bus. There's a couple of seminary students there that are waiting to get you. Don't get lured into a theological argument for 45 minutes with two seminary students that probably are going to last about 3 months there anyways. Or might go on to be great church planners, but you can have that dialogue with them over lunch rather than in front of five unbelievers. Yes?
Do child care?
Yeah, he asked, should you do child care? You know, this is probably a contextual decision again. My belief is that I never want people to feel like they can't bring their kids. I always feel like, hey, bring your kids. And if there's seven screaming kids in the middle of the room, then awesome, it's the church. You know, so normally I would say, now if you have a large crowd, like we're a big church, we're expecting 50 or 60 people to come to this every time, you might serve those people by doing childcare, but I would not ever tell people, hey, get a babysitter and come out. A lot of people get a babysitter anyways because they don't want to bring their kids because it's inconvenient for them. But if somebody shows up with three kids, don't sweat it, you know? So that's what I think anyways. And I've done these where we had to talk over kids the whole time, and it's hard, but I feel like that's what God had for us and for them. Yes?
Is there value in a sign up before step one?
I don't think there is. Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. I would not ask people to sign up because now what you're doing is you're asking people to commit to something.
Yeah.
All you're doing is giving information. You're saying we are here with one simple first step that's not hard. And isn't confusing. We're here. And so if you ask people to sign up, you're going to be tempted to not do it because nobody signed up. We're not going to do it. Only two people signed up. Let's put it off to next month. Now you're breaking the consistency principle again. Now, if nobody ever, like going back to your question in the back, if nobody ever comes to your pastor's coffee, well, then you've got to address more. Does anybody know we exist? Are we attracting any new people? Are we seeing conversions? Are we baptizing anybody? I'm assuming already most churches have, even church plants with 40 people in them, have some sort of inflow of visitors. So I would say don't have signups because what will happen is people will sign up and then not show up. And I would just do it and whoever shows. Yes. So he asked, is there any strategy you can recommend in terms of, you know, in terms of monitoring sort of these two environments here? First of all, you have to have a basic sort of administrative structure in place. So I coach right now the Connect director at a big church of about 4,000 people, and they have a Connect director, and this person, you know, his whole job is to make sure that he's, like his whole job is to get people to this, and then get them into these environments and to be a fully integrated member. And so you have to have an infrastructure piece where you're monitoring, well, how many people do we have that are with us on Sunday mornings? How many people do we have that are in community? How many people do we have that are in membership? Then you have to set some goals for what are the numbers that we're looking for there. And then you're going to have to recruit your small group leaders, or your missional community leaders, to say, it's important to us that we get people in membership. Why is membership important? This isn't a class on membership, but because in membership, a person's raised their hand. That person has raised their hand, sorry, Calvary Chapel, and said that, I'm here, care for me, hold me accountable. And so they basically given you permission to disciple them. So that's why I think it's important to get people here. And then you just have to build the infrastructure to constantly go back through here and go, we only have 60% of these people in community. Why? I would never let a person out of your membership process until they're in community. You realize the best time to get a person to commit to give, serve, and be in community is in the membership interview, which you should have a membership interview. That's Mark Dever says that's the ideal time to make sure that a person has heard the gospel. And then Dever also says, I'd rather have a person, this isn't a direct quote, but I'd rather have a person squirm for a minute or two not knowing how to articulate the gospel than spend eternity away from God. So in your membership interview, you know, let's say you have 3 or 4 or 5 elders in your membership interview, nobody comes into membership until they have committed to community, to giving, and to serving. So it's a little easier to monitor it here, whereas here you have people that come to First Step and they get in community. Now you have to convince your missional community leaders, your small group leaders, of the importance of getting these people to commit to membership. Now you might say, why do these people that are already in community need to commit to membership? It all depends on what you believe about membership. It's a little bit more difficult to hold a person accountable in terms of to know who's in and who's out. Who are we supposed to shepherd as elders? How do we do church discipline? Those different sorts of things if a person hasn't formally committed to the family. 2 minutes left. All right. Yep.
This kind of goes back to the first step, but just clarifying, you think an offsite location is better for that first step?
Is an offsite location better? Not necessarily. An offsite location isn't necessarily better. A good location is better. Yeah. A warm location is better. A location that people will come to is better. So does it need to be in a home? It all depends. You know, one of my good friends, Michael Crawford's planting in Baltimore. He'll tell you people don't want to go to people's homes, you know, in the inner city. So it depends on your culture and context. What I'm saying is don't do it in a classroom that's all cold with gray walls, okay? Back in the back. Well, here's what I'd say. Living Stones in Reno, which is one of the churches that I do a lot of work with, Living Stones has a new believers class right here. Not everybody goes to that, but they have, if you know anything about Living Stones, they're right in the center of Reno, and there's a strip club sign like almost in their parking lot. So there's a huge strip club directly next door to them. And I mean, so on Sunday evenings right now, they've got 6 or 8 transgendered people that are there, and they're wrestling with trying to wrestle through communion and transgender and who goes to which bathroom and all that's happening on Sunday nights there. So they have so many, you know, they average about 25 people a month at this. They have so many of these people are new Christians or unbelievers altogether that they've basically said to people, hey, for you, this may be the first step. So what I'm giving you is I'm giving you some guide rails to say, If you're wondering why we can't keep people, then clean up your process. But then you have to contextualize your process also. So if you're reaching all kinds of unbelievers, or if you're in the inner city or the suburbs or a rural environment, you have to figure out. I don't know exactly the tool that will work for every one of you, but what I'm saying is make it clear, consistent, and regular. Yeah. Yeah, I would say it's this right here. I would say it's that. I would just say, are you effective at taking people from Sunday morning and plugging them into a small group? And how effective? So are you 90% effective? And if you are, then I would go, you don't need to be in here. You've already got this all done, right? So most of you probably go, we want to learn something about this. And I would say that's a hard first step to go from there's 200 people in a room to I go into a small living room now. And so what do we put in between? I would put something like this in between. I'd put a pastor's coffee or a new, I don't like newcomer's glass. I would call it pastor's coffee is what I would call it because I think that's the best name for it. But okay, good. One more.
Yeah, just what happens if the first point of contact is community?
That's perfectly fine. People are going to enter at different points, especially in a younger context or maybe in an urban context. The first point of you know, people first come into community, that's totally fine. They're going to start with community. Eventually, they're going to end up up here. Sorry, they're going to end up up here at your worship gathering because someone's going to say, hey, we all gather together and worship on Sundays also. Even if you're in like a straight missional community model, you're going to gather on Sundays. And then eventually, you're going to be saying every Sunday, hey, want to learn more about this church? Come to our first step. You're not hearing that in community every week. So they've, in a sense, done a little bit of the work for you by starting with community. All right, I think we're out of time. It's a 30-minute break now until 3:30. Thanks for coming.